League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast joins you on Monday morning, September 30th, one day before the National League wild card game. That is a game that will involve your Milwaukee Brewers, a winner-take-all battle with the Washington Nationals in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. It'll be Max Scherzer matched up with Brandon Woodruff. And it's going to be a tense day, a tense moment for Brewers fans. First time Milwaukee has been in the new format wild card, where the two teams that are wild card teams compete for that last spot in the NLDS. Winner of that game goes on to face the Los Angeles Dodgers on Thursday. It all comes down to this moment. The Brewers won 89 games in 2019, finished with a little bit of a fizzle in Colorado, which of course we'll talk about here, but still, incredible stuff from the Brewers, who won the first three games of the week in Cincinnati, locked up their spot, and will be going back to the playoffs for a second straight year. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, going to be joined shortly by Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter, covering the Milwaukee Brewers. We have a lot to discuss. We wanted to, of course, chat about that series in Cincinnati where they were able to clinch some of the moments around that. We wanted to chat about little Christian Yelich stuff, a little bit on this Rockies series that really kind of one of the more devastating regular season losses in recent memory, with the Brewers getting so close to catching the St. Louis Cardinals for the NL Central, but a two-out home run with nobody on in the ninth off of Josh Hader ties the game. Sam Hilliard of the Colorado Rockies tying the game. Rockies go on to win in extra innings on a walk-off home run by Trevor Story. Of course, by now you know the Brewers then did not get a chance to tie for the division on the last day when the Cardinals dominated the Cubs after Chicago did the Brewers a solid, winning the first two games of that series to make things so interesting. But the Brewers could not work their way all the way back. It winds up being a sweep in Colorado at the hands of the Rockies. The third game was also an ugly loss, but will be remembered. Maybe actually won't be remembered for anything, because by the time we got to the fourth or fifth inning, it was clear that the Cardinals were going to win and the Brewers no longer had any incentive to keep their starters in or really worry about the outcome of that game, because it came down to it was settled at that point. The Brewers were ticketed for Washington as the second wild card team. So here we are. It was a phenomenal September. They do end up winning 89 games. I think I even maybe said that in August. It's going to take 89 games, and that's going to require them to win 20 games like they did in September last year. I thought that was impossible, and heck, not only did they do that, but you kind of feel bad that they didn't win more than that because of how it ended in Colorado. But just a remarkable September that gets them into the playoffs after an up-and-down season. No two ways about it. They were hovering, and they were not outscoring their opponents. They had struggles in their bullpen, struggles in their rotation. The offense went cold at times, and they were able to pull it off and get back for a second straight year. Also with Todd, we'll talk about this Nationals team. Max Scherzer, one of the better pitchers in baseball. No secret there. He's going to be a very tough opponent on Tuesday. So we talked about that matchup a little bit. Notable, Lorenzo Cain and Ryan Braun, who both left with injuries in the Colorado series. It's unclear if they'll be at full strength. It's unclear if Lorenzo Cain will be available at all for the wild card game. Although, you know, knowing his history and knowing the stakes of that game, I'm sure he's going to give absolutely everything he can to be in that game. But those two guys are combined 0-29 in their career against Max Scherzer. So you really don't want them to be at half speed when they get into that game, because Scherzer has success against them at full strength. And it's going to be some difficult roster decisions, because they got a couple guys that are banged up, and it's hard to know how you can keep yourself covered if those guys should re-injure themselves in this wild card game. It's difficult to know how many innings you're going to get from your starter, Brandon Woodruff, because we've seen him throw a couple two-inning stints since his return from injury, but obviously he's not stretched out to the point that you'd expect him to go a full starter's workload. Then again, he probably wouldn't have done that anyway, the way that the Brewers operate. He probably would have been a 4- or 5-inning guy before they turn to their bullpen. Again, and we've talked about this before, but the rosters change between the wild card and the NLDS. The Brewers do not have to choose an NLDS roster at this point. They have to choose a 25-man roster for the wild card game, but that probably won't include any of the starting pitchers because there is no tomorrow. So Chase Anderson, Zach Davies, Gio Gonzalez, probably are guys that are almost certainly not going to be on that roster, as well as Jimmy Nelson, who pitched a couple innings. Adrian Hauser, a little interesting because he did pitch Sunday, but did get taken out pretty early. So it's possible we see him on the roster. It might be a little surprising to see him. So a lot of bullpen guys, you're able to get a little more flexibility with your bench because you don't have to make room for the starters. So the bench will be pretty, there'll be a lot of options on the bench. So they can afford to have Lorenzo Cain on there and maybe run the risk that he has to leave early in that game. But it's still not ideal, of course. Lorenzo Cain making one of the best catches of the year. He's taking a home run away on Saturday. He still got it on defense, and it would be beneficial to have that glove out there, if nothing else, even if you can't rely on him to be a force offensively. So a lot of decisions upcoming. We'll probably get the answers in a couple, within a few hours of you hearing this. They'll certainly have some media availability on Monday in Washington. And then again, there'll be a pretty big ramp up Tuesday in that, it's just a crazy format, this wild card game. It's something that I'm sure a lot of Brewers fans get nervous just thinking about, because I remember what it was like on game 5 in the NLDS in 2011 when it felt like, you know, it was the whole weight of the world on one outcome, one lousy baseball game. It obviously felt that way in 2018 when it was game 7 of the NLCS. So they've had some recent experience in these formats, and now you get to see the Brewers try to keep their season going. A big bonus if they can win that game. You get 3 more games with a win there on Tuesday, including a home game that would be on Sunday at Miller Park. So hopefully that win over Luis Castillo against the Reds was not the last win of the season last Wednesday. But we will definitely find out. So before we get to that part of the sweating it out, the biting of the teeth and all, we'll talk to Todd Rosiak a little bit and get some intel on what's to come. Here he is now, Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, here to chat with us about this crazy up and down week that the Brewers had. He was in Cincinnati as the Brewers clinched, sweeping Cincinnati, an unlikely sweep, I would say, given some of the circumstances that enabled them to lock up a playoff spot. And hopefully those weren't the last wins of the 2019 season, because the weekend series in Colorado, of course, was a much different story, as everyone knows by now. But Todd, before we get to sort of the downside of things and before we even look ahead to the Nationals game on Tuesday, give me a sense of when you were there for when they clinched. You were in the clubhouse. Some of the takeaways you had from that celebration and that moment. I mean, I think everybody's shocked that they were able to come back the next morning practically and win again against one of the best pitchers in the National League. But the Euchre moment, I think, is what everybody takes away from this celebration, as always. But there were a lot of fun storylines in there. So what really caught your eye in the aftermath of the celebration?
I don't know if it sounds like or seems like we're getting jaded to all this stuff, but it was very much like the clinch celebrations I was in last year and in 2011. The one difference being there was a heck of a lot more cigar smoke this year. I was like basically gagging in there from all the secondhand smoke, so that was that wasn't pleasant. But yeah, Uke being in there, of course, was great. And you know, the story I was able to get out of the clubhouse with Christian Yelich being there and Ryan Braun guaranteeing a victory so that Mark Adonazio would fly Yelich in on the private plane and everything was a good little get. And being able to talk to him and seeing how much he clearly appreciated being in there for that, that was the other thing that I really took away from it. So on a personal level, I was able to avoid all champagne showers. Tom Haudricourt was not. He was doused for the, I think, 3rd or 4th straight celebration by Orlando Arcia. Nice of him to do that. So, yeah, that was pretty much it. But wild scene. And then, like you said, to turn around the next morning and play early game and beat Luis Castillo the way they did and just kind of grind out another victory to go into Denver 3-0 on that trip was pretty impressive.
As you were talking to these guys, it's no secret now that what a zany ride this has been, that the Brewers were able to get so hot in September that the Cubs went ice cold to make it not even a contest down the stretch. For a while, it looked like the Cubs were the team to beat in the NL Central, of course, and then they definitely lost their footing that they had, and the Brewers wound up easing past them. I think they ended up ahead of them by 5 games in the standings or something, which seems unlikely. But you've talked about this, you've written about this, the unlikelihood of all of this happening. It's still, to me, very difficult to explain what it is about this Brewers team that enabled them to get to the playoffs, despite the injuries and the underperforming was probably bigger than the injuries this season of some of their key players from last year. They didn't really, they had these winning streaks, but they weren't blowing teams out necessarily. They had a negative run differential going into the final stretch of the season and are just barely over it. So realistically, this team on paper, you can't have expected what we got out of it, especially given some of the challenges that they faced. So when people ask you, what got this Brewers team into the playoffs, what do you point to other than, I have no idea?
Pitching. To me, it's pretty clear cut. You go back and look at the last 3 weeks, the last 4 weeks. Just go on the schedule calendar on Brewers.com or our schedule and just look at the scores. Every game, you know, Brewers winning 5-3, 6-1, 4-1, 3-0. You know, the pitching was just incredible down the stretch. And, you know, Craig Counsell gets a lot of credit for, utilizing his pitching staff the way he did, bullpenning it again through September, getting anywhere between 4 and 6, usually 5 innings out of the starter, and then handing it over to the bullpen and letting them do their job. It was just an incredible pitching performance down the stretch, and got just enough offense most nights. And to me, you know, the other impressive part of this was after Christian Yelich went down, they never really skipped a beat. You know, they did just kind of next man up. They were able to fill in the gaps in the outfield, and obviously having Yelich would have certainly helped the offensive numbers and the run differential that we all like to joke about and everything. But to me, the overarching story of the September run was the pitching, both starting pitching and the bullpen.
Would definitely agree with that. It's amazing that this team looked, there were points this year where it looked like the relief pitching was a disaster. There were points this year the starting looked like a disaster. Really, they've sort of merged the two together because the starters aren't going deep into the games. They're going 4 to 5 innings and the relief pitchers are taking it from there. But guys like Jordan Lyles, Drew Pomeranz, guys that the Brewers weren't even thinking about because they weren't in the organization until, you know, midway through the year, the relievers like Jay Jackson, who's come on to become such a huge factor. It's just incredible that they've gotten so many contributions from Brent Suter, Ray Black, guys that you wouldn't have thought of at all coming into the year because they were not on the radar. So the Brewers have been very fortunate to find those guys and to, like you say, string together. I think there was a stretch of 10 games there where the team had allowed 3 runs or fewer, and only 2 of those games had been 3 runs, had been 2 runs or fewer in the other 8. So that kind of tells you all you need to know, taking advantage of an easy part of their schedule, easy in quotes, but that also seemed to help. They got they just got hot at the right time against the right foes. You said you talked to Christian Yelich. Of course, that story ran at jsonline.com. A lot of people were interested in that. Mark Adonazio flying him out. What's his state of mind in your mind? He's obviously, you know, he's around the team a little bit, but he can't be at every game, and I'm sure this is very tough for him and very tough for the team to be without him, but they have had success without him. How does where do you sense that he's at this point?
You know, he told me that he wants to be around the team, but he also is cognizant of wanting to stay out of everybody's way, which is kind of crazy to think about. You know, this is reigning MVP, possible 2-time MVP here, depending on how the votes come in here. He's basically, his focus is on rehabbing, getting his knee healed up, and having a relatively normal offseason once he's free and clear from the rehab stuff. So he'll be around. I'm guessing he'll be in Washington. I could be mistaken on that, but it would not surprise me that he would be out there for that. But kind of keeping a low profile, keeping in the background, and letting the guys that are active and playing, you know, obviously take center stage and do what they need to do to try to win that game and then advance, which would result in an NLDS matchup against the Los Angeles Dodgers.
A lot of storylines there, and we will certainly have time to unpack that if we get that far. Christian Yelich does win the batting title in the National League. He's still qualified for that second straight year. He became the first Brewer to win it last year, and then he repeats as the batting champion, top batting average in the league at .329. I believe he also became the first Brewer to lead the league in on-base percentage this year, so that's a new wrinkle. Of course, no one's blind to the fact that Yelich had a ridiculous season. He'll finish most likely second, I would think, in the NL MVP voting behind Cody Bellinger. Not sure. Maybe he falls to third. Maybe he gets really close to first. I don't know. But he obviously had a tremendous season. They moved his when he first got injured, there was some thought that he was going to be out for 6 weeks, and then probably smartly bumped that back to 8 weeks because that meant he would not be back for the World Series, and that sort of would keep anybody from talking about that. But do you get a sense there's any chance whatsoever, if crazier things have happened, but the Brewers go to the World Series, that Christian Yelich could somehow be available for those games?
No, I don't see how that would happen unless there's like some miraculous healing that's gone on behind the scenes that we haven't been privy to. We were told point blank that, you know, he was done for 2019, and the focus was turning to 2020 and being ready for spring training, and that's what I believe. You know, you kind of go by that, and to get him back, you know, were they to make some crazy World Series run, you know, on paper, sure, that I'm sure that would serve as a lift for the team, but at what risk? You know, you got to think that the kneecap is going to need more time to heal than that, and to potentially risk him for further injury moving forward, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're putting the 2020 season at risk. I just don't see that playing out. So Brewers have always err on the side of caution when it comes to injuries. And when you're talking about a franchise guy like Yelich, I would think even more so. So, I would put the Christian Yelich possibly coming back storyline on ice. I don't think that's going to happen.
Injuries have been part of where this week went wrong, turning to the Colorado series. The injury to Ryan Braun that kept him out of the last two games of that series, although it does sound like he'll be available for the wild card game. Lorenzo Cain is a little bit less of a certainty. He collided at home plate, a very controversial play in Saturday night's game. We will talk about that game. That was a pretty devastating loss for the Brewers, but Cain had to leave that game, didn't play Sunday. He's already so banged up. The guy is just going to, he's just going to need like 2 months of just straight rest and nothing else at this rate. But the injury bug has bitten the Brewers a lot in the second half of the season. Keston Hiura went down, of course. The Braun and Cain have been nicked up. Obviously, Yelich. Brandon Woodruff has been working his way back from an injury. But from what you've heard, I know you weren't in Colorado. From what you've heard and seen, do you anticipate that they'll be able to get Lorenzo Cain up and running for that wild card game? I have to think it's going to be really hard for him to miss that game. He was a big part of the wild card game when Kansas City played Oakland a couple years ago, very memorable game. I have to think they're going to try to get him in there, but it is tough. They're going to have to get, I would imagine, Tyrone Taylor on the roster to get that extra outfielder too.
Yeah, with the teams being able to change rosters from series to series, the Brewers are going to have to be absolutely certain that Lorenzo Cain can play a full game or close to it, because you don't want to put him on the roster, have him go out in the center field for an inning or two, and then all of a sudden say, I can't play anymore. Then you're down a guy. So Cain and the athletic training staff have to come to some sort of understanding that, you know, if he can play, he's going to be able to go the distance or pretty close to it. Otherwise the team is caught shorthanded the guy, which is not good in a one and done type situation. So, you know, Lorenzo Cain is, you know, for all his catches that he's made this year, and there's been some incredible ones, to me, the storyline this year has been his quiet leadership playing through injury, and his numbers clearly have suffered offensively. They've gotten a little bit better here down the stretch, but this is a guy that, you know, rightly or wrongly, got a reputation in Kansas City for being injury prone, and he's carried that with him. He's obsessed with proving to people that he is not injury prone. And to think about the things that he's played through this year, starting with the thumb, having to go get that numbing shot, You know, a back issue he's been dealing with, a knee that's going to need surgery. Now the ankle, it's just been a nightmarish year for him injury wise, but he's going to finish in the top five on the team in terms of games played, which is really a nod to his mental toughness and his leadership. You know, he really sets the tone for those guys in the clubhouse, and you know, numbers aside, I think he's doing everything within his power to earn his $15 million a year salary.
And despite those injuries, we saw him hit a home run in the Colorado series. We saw him make a catch that might be probably is the number one defensive play of the year, robbing a two-run homer that would have tied the game. Now, the Brewers did end up losing that Saturday night game, but he is the type of player, even though the numbers show that he has not been good offensively this year, at least relative to where he was last year, he is capable of contributing even when he's hobbled. Ryan Braun's the same way. Ryan Braun will go from sitting out with a back injury to, you know, hitting two home runs the first game back. So it's very difficult to... It's not a situation where you could say, oh, we want them to sit because they're not going to be good healthy, or, you know, half healthy anyway, but they kind of are good. So even with these injuries, so that's a tough decision that they're going to have to make. This Saturday night game, again, I know you didn't see it in person, but I can't think of a tougher loss in the regular season given where they were here. They did lose the penultimate game of the 2017 season after going up 6-0, so, and that ended up haunting them, but I think many people ruled the Brewers out at that point in the season. They ended up missing the playoffs by a game. This was a tough one. They could have been tied in the NL, you know, in the NL Central lead with the Cardinals. Josh Hader surrenders a home run to a guy that most of us just have not heard of with two outs in the ninth and nobody on. Ugh, man, just a gut punch. And I don't know if you remember a more damaging regular season loss, and I don't know. That one's got to be up there for you too, right?
Well, first of all, credit to you for using the word penultimate. That never can be used enough.
I use it all the time. It's weird.
In any situation. I always intentionally try to cover the second to last game of the year just for the purpose of using penultimate, because it can never be used enough.
I agree. I love it.
Yeah, but I mean, just a crazy way to lose that game, playing a low-scoring game at Coors Field and then to give up solo homers in the final three innings like that. Two to guys that you really hadn't heard of before, to start off. And then, you know, Trevor Story hitting the homer off of Matt Albers, who hadn't pitched in quite a while. And I'm sure Brewers fans are hoping that he never pitches again for the Brewers after that moment. Just a crazy loss. And obviously the Brewers were privy to the score of the Cardinals Cubs game today, you know, watching that, blowout unfold as it did. Craig Counsell wasted no time in pulling his key guys today in what wound up being an extra innings loss. So, yeah, I mean, many missed opportunities. The Brewers could have walked out of Colorado Central Division champions and made their road in the playoffs a little bit easier. But it is what it is, and now the Brewers will travel to D.C. for what should be a pretty entertaining wild card game against the only other team I would say in baseball right now, arguably on a bigger role, you know, just coming from nowhere, basically, the Nationals, to kind of follow the same storyline as the Brewers, but have been hotter for longer.
20 years from now, people are going to look back and look at on paper how this season ended these last two games, and they'll think, wow, what a terrible ending. They lose this game on Saturday, and then Sunday they lose on a walk-off wild pitch in the 13th inning or whatever. I honestly don't even know what inning it was, but obviously, like you said, that game just lost all relevance whatsoever. A lot of guys were pulled out of the lineup. That game was a tough one on paper, but meaningless in reality, as they knew they were headed to Washington at this point. And We talked a little bit last week of Washington as a matchup. Max Scherzer, we know for sure now, is going to be starting this game. The Nationals have the worst bullpen in baseball. But if the Brewers, I'm sure the Brewers don't think this, but if any fan thinks that we're going to see a hint of the Nationals bullpen in this game, they're mistaken. We're going to see Max Scherzer, and then we'll probably see Steven Strasburg, who is on regular rest, backing him up if needed. Not a lot of success that the current Brewers have had against either one of those guys. Christian Yelich, of course, one of the rare examples against Scherzer. But Scherzer's been up and down a little bit since his injury, since he came back from an injury. So there is at least a possibility that he's hittable here. I don't know. I don't know how you look at this matchup with Scherzer. He's somebody who's had success against the Brewers before. Do you see any inroads that the Brewers could make other than baseball's a crazy game and you never really can predict?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's the old adage, just get in and you never know what's going to happen. I certainly would give the benefit here of the doubt to the Nationals playing at home, Scherzer on the mound, Strasburg and Patrick Corbin if you need him in the bullpen. I'm certain the Brewers will load up on left-handed hitters to try to counter Scherzer and then probably Strasburg after that. But Scherzer's got a ton of big game experience, plenty of strikeout in his game. And to me, the Brewers are going to have to strike early and they're going to have to manufacture runs. You know, you just cannot rely on the home run in the postseason like they did in the regular season. And two evenly matched teams on paper, I would say. We all remember that crazy series out in Washington in August, with that 14 inning game being one of the more memorable games of the season for the Brewers. So should be interesting. Scherzer's thrown some incredible games against the Brewers before. I remember the one, I think it was 2014, where he almost threw a perfect game. Carlos Gomez with a broken bat bleeder in the seventh inning. That was the only hit. And then he apologized publicly after for breaking it up on such a cheap hit, which was pretty unusual to hear a guy apologize for that.
That's so Gomez.
He struck out 16 or 18, I want to say, that day, Scherzer, and I think that's still, in my 9 years covering baseball, the most dominant performance I've seen by a pitcher in person. So the challenge is going to be there, but as Craig Counsell said, in postseason you're going to see nothing but outstanding pitching, so you got to basically step up and handle it from the outset here if you want to advance.
Three-time Cy Young winner. Yeah, 16 strikeouts in that game in 2015. Just probably the most dominant game ever pitched at Miller Park. And there has been a no-hitter pitch there when Carlos Zambrano did it in that strange Cubs-Astros series that got relocated. But no doubt in my mind that Scherzer outing, even when you count Ben Sheets' 18 strikeout performance, that Scherzer outing's the best that we've ever seen at Miller Park. The Brewers did sweep the Nationals at Miller Park, beat Scherzer, beat Strasburg in separate games, got to their bullpen a little bit as well, but they do have some success against them. Then, of course, there was that series you mentioned in Washington. Brewers only won one of three, and it was a zany 15-14 game. Not even sure what to make of that contest. Hopefully we don't have that again at the wild card stage, because that would be that'd be a long, bizarre night to have to rehash something like that again. I don't know if we should spend a lot of time looking at the wild card roster, because it's a one-night-only occasion. It's going to exist for Tuesday night. We'll probably know shortly after people listen to this podcast who's on it. I did try to map it out a little bit in my head. Starting pitchers probably won't be part of it because they can be added. The NLDS roster would be totally different. So there'll probably be a lot of bullpen-like arms that get selected. As I'm looking at it, I think Tyrone Taylor has to make it because of the Lorenzo Cain health situation. You don't know what you have there. And then I think it could come down to whether they want to add Hernan Perez, Travis Shaw, or Tyler Austin. I think a couple of those guys could make it. I guess as you think about the wild card roster, what decision really has you intrigued?
Yeah, it's just, to me, it's the pitching. What do you do behind Brandon Woodruff? And you know, obviously you're not going to be including starters that would be on your NLDS roster if you do make it that far. So obviously trying to line up your best relievers and wondering how long you're going to be able to get Brandon Woodruff in that game. He's pitched his previous two outings. He's pitched two innings each time out, about 45 pitches or so, if I remember correctly. So if you can get three innings out of him at this point, you know, maybe 60 pitches or something, 55, 60 pitches, I think you're doing okay. And then you hand it over to the bullpen from there. So, you know, if you're trying to get some length behind him, you know, Freddie Peralta would be an option. Pomeranz certainly has the ability to go multiple innings. Josh Hader certainly has the ability to go multiple innings. Obviously, you'd want the lead at that point. So to me, that's where the interesting part lies. The only other thing I would say is you try to load up with some left-handed bats to face Scherzer, and then you figure Strasburg if Scherzer doesn't go real long in the game. And then get a little bit of versatility there. So, you know, the Lorenzo Cain thing again, I think is up in the air. He's going to have to be able to convince those guys that he's healthy and feeling good enough to play a full game. And, I guess the good news is that that's not a very cavernous ballpark or cavernous outfield. He should be able to roam that a little bit better than, say, where they just wore Coors Field. That's a whole different ball game there. So, you know, it'll be interesting. And then should the Brewers win that, all of a sudden that all that goes out the window when you're constructing just a completely different roster for a five-game series. So it's just another fun exercise and something that I know fans get a kick out of and should be interesting to see when they announce it who winds up making the cut.
Notable that Adrian Hauser was pulled pretty early in Sunday's game. Again, you were talking about the scoreboard watching. At that point, Cardinals had taken a huge lead over the Cubs. It was looking like the NL Central was going to be theirs. And I wonder if Adrian Hauser winds up on this wild card game roster as a potential option out of the bullpen. Jordan Lyles, another guy that you could maybe see them working on there, similar to how the Nationals are almost surely going to have their big guns, Corbin, Strasburg, and as options behind Max Scherzer. You could see maybe them going to Jordan Lyles, although I think they probably would be looking for a couple innings. They've got a lot of guys who could fill that role. Fascinating to me that Freddie Peralta, who has looked very good in the home stretch, could be one of the big key guys out of the bullpen here in the biggest game, the winner-take-all wild card game. I don't know if there's any other thoughts about this wild card game, how they match up otherwise, beyond the starting pitcher. Like you said, Woodruff, he'll be starting. Don't know how long he'll go. Guessing 3 to 4 innings is a pretty safe bet. They have Anthony Rendon, who is an MVP candidate himself, although he struggled a little bit down the stretch. Trey Turner, Adam Eaton, Juan Soto. A lot of good bats in this lineup. Who else? Who do you think about when you think about the Washington Nationals from an offensive perspective?
Well, you pretty much named them. The guys that jump out to me, it would be Anthony Rendon, who is obviously an MVP candidate. Trey Turner has the potential to be a real thorn in the Brewers' sides and has been over the course of his career. Fast guy, pesky guy. He's also got some power. Adam Eaton has had success against the Brewers as well. And then Juan Soto's one of those young prodigies who, you know, has helped the Nationals and their fans forget about the loss of Bryce Harper. So they certainly have a nice core of offensive talent beyond the pitching. And that's another reason why they've been able to put together the run that they did and are in the wild card game and hosting the wild card game. So certainly plenty of challenges for the Brewers pitching staff on that end as well.
Juan Soto doesn't even turn 21 until, I want to say, next month, sometime this fall, which is insane. They do have a couple left-handed bats that I could see guys like Suter, Hader, Pomeranz being key for. But they've got pretty much everything. They've got a pretty balanced offense and pitching staff. They've got just a pretty good team, which is saying a lot considering their best player, or at least their highest profile player, Bryce Harper, left for free agency in the offseason with, you know, now playing for the Philadelphia Phillies and staying home as he watches Washington in the postseason. As you look ahead, let's say they win this game, which I know is going to be tough, but if they do win this game and wind up in L.A., I would think there's some thought that being in a five-game series with the Dodgers might even be a little bit better than a seven-game series because the Dodgers are so good. Only having to beat them 3 times instead of 4 is, I don't know, I guess you could interpret that as an advantage. The Dodgers are the best team in the NL, heavily favored, I have to think, to get to the World Series yet again for a third straight year. But do you look at it as a matchup the Brewers, you know, might be better off in a five-game set? And, I mean, the Brewers had some success early this year against the Dodgers. I don't know how you look at that matchup.
Yeah, I don't see the Brewers being overwhelmed or intimidated by playing the Dodgers. They've played well historically at Dodger Stadium in the past, and even though the Dodgers were head and shoulders above most of the other teams in the NL this year and ran away with it, I would expect it to be a good series, a close series, and it would not surprise me if it went 5 games. To be honest with you. But again, we're looking way ahead here, and there's a lot to be determined between now and then. So if they do indeed make it, we can be talking about it maybe midweek, huh, JR?
Yeah, we probably will need to do an emergency podcast of some variety. to preview a series that would begin on Thursday in LA. They play Thursday, Friday in LA, and then the Brewers would get one more home game at Miller Park guaranteed on Sunday. We will see if that comes to pass. Wanted to ask about one guy who I've noticed having a really good stretch here. That's Orlando Arcia. He seems to be hitting the ball better, and that's obviously a good time for that to be happening. He's making a ton of plays on defense, as always. Seems pretty locked in right now, as Orlando Arcia could be. And we've touched on this a little bit, the shortstop position, as maybe a question mark for 2020. Probably less so because they have so many other question marks that are going to be more pressing, but this is a pretty critical moment for Orlando Arcia to demonstrate that he's a guy that they can rely on in 2020 and beyond. And are you seeing what I'm seeing, that he seems to be finding himself a little bit the right time this season?
His hitting has definitely come on a little bit here down the stretch, but if you take the second half as a whole, it's been pretty miserable offensively. And he has been prone to making some boneheaded defensive plays at bad times. Overall, he's outstanding defensively at shortstop, which is why he's still playing the bulk of the games there. It'll be interesting to see. I don't know. They've got other decisions to make, other positions, but there isn't anybody with the trade of Mauricio Dubon who appears to be Major League ready at this point that could take over a shortstop. So if Dubon were still in the system, I would say potentially the Brewers could look to try to shop Orlando Arcia in the offseason, maybe try to land some pitching or something else. But at this point, I think the Brewers just have to hope that he continues to produce with the bat, continue to hit like he did last postseason. And if he does, that gives you a really nice balanced lineup, a guy that's hitting, usually seventh or eighth every day, who can get on base and try to help turn the lineups over a little bit.
Again, the Brewers will be getting underway on Tuesday, about 7 o'clock local time in Washington. Winner take all. They've had a couple winner take all games in recent memory. Of course, game 7 of the NLCS last year that ended poorly. Game 5 of the NLDS in 2011 that ended with a wild celebration, a walk-off win starring Niger Morgan. And before that, you got to go back to the 1982 ALCS if you want to see. That's not true. The 82 World Series winner take all, that did not end well either. Hopefully we see something a little bit different here. Before I let you go, though, one question that's a little bit outside of this sphere. Looking at the Chicago Cubs, they announced that Joe Maddon would not be back as manager for next season. Not really a surprise. It feels like the conversation around them is very much about how they were a dynasty that never materialized, almost as if there's a little bit of an obituary being written about the Chicago Cubs going forward. I feel like that's a little premature. I still feel like they've got a lot of great talent coming back, even though there's talk that they might shop Chris Bryant and look to rebuild a little bit. What do you think about the Chicago Cubs going forward? I would still think of them as a potential central favorite, but maybe I'm too optimistic given what they've gone through this season.
Yeah, they do have some decisions to make. The salaries that they're paying guys like Yu Darvish and now Craig Kimbrell are hamstringing them a little bit. I believe Ben Zobrist comes off the books this year. And, Chris Bryant will be heading into free agency, I believe, after next year. So there's another decision for them to make. But, they've got some nice talent there, obviously. Rizzo in place, Baez, Contreras. And, you look at a guy like Schwarber, who had a breakout season this season. You have to think that they're going to try to bring him back as well. But he could wind up landing a pretty nice free agent deal. He'd be an ideal American League type player for sure. So there's going to be talent there. They're going to make some moves. They've always got although it was funny hearing them cry about the purse strings earlier in the season, they do have the financial wherewithal to pick up some big salaries. So Thiel's got his work cut out for him. I'm almost more interested in seeing who the manager winds up being. I saw David Ross has already kind of expressed interest there, and that would be a natural fit, even though having never managed before, that would be interesting to see how that goes. So a lot of things that kind of work themselves out down there, and a lot of things yet to transpire, but that's what makes the offseason fun.
Yeah, I wonder where Mike Matheny might land, former Brewers catcher, who, of course, was manager with the Cardinals. I remember he was immediately after Ned Yost announced his retirement that he would be looked at as a replacement there. You could see Mike Matheny coming back to the Central maybe in Chicago. So that would definitely be a name to watch. But lots of offseason to discuss. Future podcasts forthcoming. The Brewers certainly have a lot on their own plate. We'll be talking all about that. But for now, the Brewers are a playoff team. We'll be looking at the playoffs this week. And like I said, maybe another podcast later on if we have an NLDS to chat about. Thanks for joining us, Todd. We will chat again soon. I know this is a big week for Brewers fans. It's going to be pretty exciting.
Enjoy it, JR.
That's what we have for you today. Get excited. This is going to be fun. I realize it's not just fun. I realize that when the Brewers lost on Saturday night, that was a pretty devastating moment in time. It was not a fun moment in time, even though that game was a good game. The Brewers had their opportunity there. It was a spirited race for the NL Central. The fact that they were even in the NL Central race is ridiculous. The fact that they were threatening Washington for the top wildcard spot is ridiculous. But I realize the outcome made it not so fun. But still, this is an opportunity to really reflect on the whole season. If you go back and take inventory of all the games that the Brewers have played, and I've done some of that at jsonline.com. You should check out some of our post-game or post-season content there. You'll find that there are a lot more moments for the Brewers this year where they went up in the eighth or the ninth or dodged a bullet, you know, because an out was made at the warning track with runners, you know, tying run in scoring position or whatever. They have had way more exciting games where they've won than games they've given away, like what you saw on Saturday night. That was only the second time that they'd lost this season after leading through eight innings. So it's really, they've lived the charmed life. They've had way more beneficial outcomes than bad ones. Their record in one-run games took a little bit of a hit this weekend in Colorado with the back-to-back losses here at the end, but they've been very good in one-run games. They are lucky to be here, and they're good, of course, too, but this has been a pretty charmed season for the Brewers for them to get to the playoffs after what they went through the first 5 months of the season with injuries, ineffective players, some things backfiring, and so it is fortunate to be in this spot. It should be fun. I know it's going to be tense, but it should be a fun opportunity. If they do lose, hopefully it's not a 9-0 game. Hopefully it's a game that people can enjoy. So that's all what we got. Like we said, we'll definitely be back with you later this week if there is more baseball to talk about. Otherwise, we'll start looking at the offseason next week around this time. Thanks for listening to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You know where to find us. You can find me on Twitter at JR Radcliffe, JRRADCLIFFE. Todd Rosiak's pretty easy to find on Twitter as well. Thanks to him for joining us this week. We will chat with you again very soon. Take care.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.